Dark culture.
Hello, I'm Poe Johnson, the guest editor of Narratives in Dark Culture, and joining me today is Jamie Broadbex. Jamie is the founder and managing editor of Black Girl Nerds, a blog and podcast series dedicated to creating a space for Black women to explore their nerdist passions. She is also the host of another podcast, Get It Right, which explores popular culture from a reproductive justice perspective. I want to thank you, Jamie, for joining us today.
Thanks for having me on.
And so first I want to ask, what's it like being you?
Wow. I don't know how to answer that, quite frankly. I mean, being me requires not that much sleep. It requires being someone who's super passionate and willing to make some sacrifices with respect to having a social life. You know, being me is waking up every morning, going to work at a 40-hour-a-week job, and then clocking out at 5 o'clock and going home and working on whether I'm answering tons of emails, editing a podcast, doing production for an upcoming podcast, or writing editorials for the site, or editing articles for the site. I'm doing all of that on a daily basis, and my weekends consist of all of that, minus having to actually clock in at the day job.
Great. So, to my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, please, Black Girl Nerds has been around for about 4 years?
Yes.
And so I'm sure you're asked this all the time, but what led you to create Black Girl Nerds?
I was on Google and just did a search using that term because I just didn't really see a lot of spaces in the interwebs with respect to nerd and geek cultures, so to speak. I didn't see anything that reflected women like me, so I went on Google and typed it in, just seeing what would pop up. Maybe there was a really cool website that I should check out, and nothing came up, and I just thought that that was really odd and interesting at the same time, that there wasn't an afterthought for the term Black Girl Nerds on Google, which you can relatively find anything on Google. So, yeah, I did that, and I already had a blogger account at the time. I was actually the writer of an independent film site, a few film sites, actually, but I had had some experience blogging. So I had already had my account set up and went ahead and just created Black Girl Nerds on Blogger, and it just kind of evolved. It, you know, 24 hours after the page launched, I got an email from a published author saying, hey, I would love to write content with you on the site, and BGN became more than just Jamie and her personal musings, but it actually became a community of so many other voices and perspectives. So I did that, and then in March of 2013, I launched my podcast after a pretty heavy demand from fans and followers of Black Girl Nerds. And I was on another podcast at the time, Pete Soulbrother, and he asked me, would you ever think about doing podcasting? And I said, it's something I would like to do. So once I kind of made that commitment on a recordable podcast that you could listen to forever, I just decided to go ahead and do it. And launched the podcast in March of 2013, and the community and the website and everything from live tweeting and attending various conventions across the country, it's been a really fun 4 years for me. I'm just really surprised and amazed at how much it's grown, and that folks even want to talk to me about it and are curious to know about the space that I've created. So it's been a really great ride.
Okay, so to sort of step back for a moment, to sort of for the people who are perhaps not as familiar with your blog, what would you say is the mission statement for Black Girl Nerds?
It's for women, and particularly women of color and Black women, to embrace their eccentricities and just feel empowered by who they are as self-identified nerds and geeks. That's the mission statement of the site. So it's just really a safe space for Black women to feel like, okay, I can talk about, you know, my favorite animes of all time, or I can geek out over Harry Potter fandom. I can talk about my favorite comic books from the 90s. You know, like, you can talk about these things and have a community of other women that are like-minded, that are cut from the same cloth as you, and have really great conversations where that wasn't quite, you know, that wasn't really provided for us before. So, yeah.
So when did you start finding yourself getting into geek culture and nerd culture?
Well, I didn't even know it was really geek and nerd culture at the time. Growing up as a kid, I grew up in a predominantly male neighborhood, so I was definitely a tomboy, and all of my friends were guys. So I was into what all the boys were into, which was video games, comic books, and collecting sports cards. That's pretty much all I did growing up, and comic books and specifically was something that I was very drawn to at a young age, and I spent a great deal of my youth just reading them and collecting them and watching the favorite cartoons and animated series during the 90s when I was reading comic books. Yeah, I was into those things, even though now they're considered nerdy and geeky, but at the time, they were just really cool, fun, you know, things that I was just interested in. And yeah, video games and collecting cards, and even collecting the Marvel trading cards. I had done that. So yeah, I was always into those types of fandoms, and now those fandoms do have the label of nerdy or geeky, which is cool.
So what were your favorite comic books, video games? What were you really into as a kid?
So growing up, I've always been a Marvel girl. I really hadn't read any of the other publishers, like DC Comics and Vertigo and that, of course, and those books. But I grew up on Marvel. My first book that I... Well, the first comic book I ever read was an Archie comic, but... Mm-hmm. And even like the Sunday comic strips, like Garfield and Phoenix and all of that. But my first like flagship book that just I was into was X-Men. X-Men just did it for me in a lot of ways. And even the spinoff Team Excalibur was something that drawn me to X-Men, because it was the first time that I saw a book. And this is Excalibur I'm speaking about, but it was the first time I saw a book where it was all women, mostly women, on the front cover. Excalibur, I think it's issue one, special edition issue. And I just thought it was really cool to see that. Both the superheroines and villains were made up of women. So I was drawn to that as a kid. Not even knowing, you know, things about gender politics or anything like that, I was just drawn to seeing girls on a comic book cover. So I read that. I read X-Men growing up, big fan of that. I also, as far as video games are concerned, like, I did play, like, a lot of games back in the 80s and 90s. Not so much anything current now, but back then, I was an NES player, so, you know, obviously, like, Super Mario Brothers and Legend of Zelda and Metroid and then, you know, Super NES and Street Fighter 2 and, you know, those kinds of kind of things, those kind of games. So yeah, those were some favorites of mine growing up.
That actually leads nicely into the next question, which is, so to my mind, Black Girl Nerds is as successful as any site that, at least that I'm aware of, in sort of covering a kind of wide range of nerd culture, geek culture, however you want to call it, and fandom elements, while also remembering to be critical of the way popular culture can kind of fetishize and dehumanize the bodies of people of color, particularly women of color. So have you found it difficult to sort of balance this coverage, this wide coverage of popular culture in one instance and also remaining sort of true to these other critical elements?
No, because I think being in the, you know, being in a community of women, and for Black women, it's not difficult to take on topics that affect me and my humanity as a woman and as a person of color. So that is something that is automatic for me. It's just not something where I have to do research, where I have to make an effort to tackle these issues. Like a white person actually has to take the time to research and try to figure out social justice issues that affect people of color. You know, men have to figure out issues that affect women and try to understand the framework behind it. But me being both of those things, it comes easy to me when I see tropes, you know, women being highly sexualized, seeing, you know, racist tropes of people of color being represented on film, you know, seeing old archaic tropes about Black women, you know, being sassy, and, you know, all of these things that I've seen and been fed through media for years. It's easy for me to take on those topics because those are things that I've always been passionate about speaking out about. So that coupled with talking about nerdy fandoms and nerd culture, it just, you know, it's just a part of my makeup as a Black girl nerd, I guess. So it's not hard at all to tackle both of those issues. And I think that's why I've, you know, gotten some notoriety for the way I've been able to handle BPN, is because I'm able to tackle both of those things and create that balance. And it helps, I think it speaks to a lot of people. It speaks to everyone who reads the content on the site, that listen to the podcast, that really are a part of the community. And I think that's important. I think to dismiss any of that, to, you know, ignore any of that would be disingenuous to, you know, my sensibilities as a woman and as a Black woman.
So it's sort of like piggyback that, because I know that I can assume that there have been challenges that sort of you had to face being a Black woman and entering into this kind of field. So what have been some of the challenges that you have had in terms of creating this blog and podcast? And I mean that in terms of just, in one instance, we are like swimming through the noise of the internet, right? And mm-hmm. There's also dealing with techie and fan communities who are not always the most open. And also just as a person who, like you said before, has a 9-to-5 job.
Yeah. I mean, I think as a Black woman, you know, first of all, you have to work twice as hard and, you know, put out twice as much effort into your work for people to really respect and to really recognize that you are someone that's worthy to be a part of this space. And the reason I say it like that is because my deep cred, my knowledge on topics is always questioned. Mm-hmm. And that's just a part of being in this space. A lot of it has to do with being a woman more than being a Black woman. But also being a Black woman, you know, being in this space of nerd culture, which has been predominantly white and male, we're always being questioned in some respects to our knowledge on the history of comics or the history of sci-fi fantasy properties. It's something that unfortunately goes with the territory. Not all guys are like that. Not all nerds treat women that way, but there's definitely a very strong contingent of nerds that do. So, yeah, I do face those challenges, and I also face the challenge of not getting the kind of notoriety and attention that other nerd outlets that are run by white guys do. Mm-hmm. And I say that because I've been to San Diego Comic Con, which I applied like 3 times, 3 years in a row to try to get in, and finally had to take it to Twitter to get people to pay attention. But when I did get there, I noticed that there were some nerd outlets that had like a third of the followers that I have on Twitter, a third of the fans that I have on Facebook, not nearly the kind of reach that I've been able to have just in the 4 years that I've been in this space, and they've been around longer. So, and I don't know, maybe tenure has to do with it, but I just think it's interesting how some outlets get a lot more opportunities than others, and it's definitely a boys' club out there. And it is a club of people where it's like, you know, it's a who you know kind of thing as well, which doesn't always have to deal with race and gender, but unfortunately that's sort of the beast of the business. But yeah, that's been the biggest challenge for me, is to be able to have a platform where I'm able to make this into a career. You know, people are like, how are you not doing this for a living now? Like, you should be doing this full time. And I ask myself that question every day. I just haven't had the opportunities that maybe some other nerd outlets have to be able to monetize and make a career out of it. I mean, I feel like I'm definitely getting there, but you know, it's just, I guess it's just the challenge of being the kind of space that we are, that we may not get the same kind of attention as other nerd spaces. So.
Yeah, so, and again, to sort of come back off of that, so fandom and really geek culture and tech culture, for that matter, have long been sort of thought of as almost exclusively white spaces, at least for like that from the outside culture, and perhaps that's changing now. But how do you think Black Girl Nerds, counters this narrative?
Well, as far as spaces that are predominantly white.
Yes.
Okay. I mean, it counters the narrative. It first of all shows that, you know, we're not a stereotype, that we're not a monolith, that Black Girl Nerds is encompassing of so many parts to what it is to be a woman and a Black woman. And I think it's very important that people see that, because we have been put in these boxes for many years. There's a great book by Melissa Harris Perry called Sister Citizen, and she talks about these three specific stereotypes that have been, you know, oppressed upon Black women for centuries. And sadly, a lot of that is perpetuated still in mainstream media and entertainment industry and music and hip-hop music. So it's very important that people recognize that, you know, there are women that are into things like heavy metal music. There was a post that we just repurposed tonight in response to the appearance of Beyonce on the Country Music Awards. We did an article several months ago about this Black woman who's a self-declared cowgirl. So seeing those kinds of articles, seeing that kind of content run through the site changes the narrative in a lot of ways, not only in the face of, you know, white media, but also in the face of other Black media. So I think that it's important that, you know, all of our experiences are expressed, and that we aren't, you know, pigeonholed. Because then I think by pigeonholing us, it doesn't give us an opportunity to be able to see really cool, new, innovative projects from Black people and people of color.
Actually, it's interesting because, I mean, with the CMA thing that happened with Beyonce last night, we're filming this right after, or recording this right after the CMAs were aired the day before. There's this kind of like immediate backlash, right? Sort of like Black Lives Matter or anti-Black Lives Matter, anti-police, like sort of this or people suggesting that Beyoncé is anti-belief, rather. And so we seem to be in a cultural moment in which we can see this synthesis between social justice movements such as Black Lives Matter and a kind of more diverse popular cultural landscape, hopefully, anyway. So in your opinion, why do you think this is? Like, do you think that these things are as connected as they seem, or are we just looking at two things that are just sort of merging together at the right time?
Well, I think we are now in a digital age where so many young people finally have a voice that didn't before. Black Lives Matter sprouted from social media, and we always knew Black Lives Matter. We always knew that police brutality and excessive force and state-sanctioned violence towards Black people had been happening for a very long time. But we never really had an opportunity to share our opinions and our thoughts and even our activism in a way that was so profound as it is today with the use of Twitter and Facebook and all of those really great social networks. And then, of course, there's the tragic aspect of social media where we're actually capturing a lot of these shootings on video and seeing it live in front of our eyes. Tragic in the sense that we have to witness it, but also it again sheds some light, and it also allows the victims of these actions to be amplified in a way where the media doesn't have control over it like they used to, where you would just have to see whatever's on TV and whatever's edited and cut by a studio, that is what is distributed to your television set. But now, anybody can share news. So, not to kind of wander off from your question, but I think that it's important that people recognize that social media is a huge part of why social activism is happening. Many people feel the need to use this as a conduit to get their voices heard. And definitely, I think in this day and age, we're seeing that happen more than being able to see or witness or hear in the past. So yeah, I hope I answered that question.
No, you're great. No, it's great. One last question, which probably has really multiple parts to it, though. So, in one instance, we have Black Girl Nerds, which, I'm going to ask this question, actually, not assume this question. Do you think of this as a site of social activism?
I mean, when I created it, I didn't. I created it just wanted to see a website about girls like me talking about nerd stuff. I mean, it was really that simple. I never thought it would evolve into the space that it is today. So looking at it today, I guess it is a form of social activism. We're talking about a lot of issues that affect who we are, our sensibilities as women, and whether it's talking about the hypersexualization of Lulu Williams from Iron Man comic book, to talking about Black Lives Matter. I think it's important that we have these spaces where we're able to share it. But yeah, I guess you could say that BGM is definitely a place for social activism. And I like sharing that, but I also like doing really fun, entertaining things that bring a lot of light and levity to the space and is incredibly inclusive. So even though it is through the lens of Black women and you're going to see articles that are about our experiences, it's a very inclusive space where anybody can be a part of the conversation and you don't have to feel like somehow you're being left out of this community just because the women that you see on the site don't look like you.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what it's about. But at the same time, understand that it's a space where we can finally feel free and feel safe enough to express our opinions and thoughts and perspectives on our life experiences as geeks and nerds. So, yeah.
And I think you've probably answered part of this question already, but maybe to expand on that. So given that you can think of Black Girl Nails, or you think of Black Girl Nails as doing some elements of social activism, do you think that there's, I don't want to say responsibility because that's too much, but there's a compelling rationale for online fan communities, particularly those which people of color belong to do something in terms of furthering some kind of social activist message?
I leave it up to the owner of that said website or podcast, or, you know, whoever the content creator is, to decide how they want to deliver their message or represent their brand. I just happen to like to talk about issues that affect me on a personal level as well as a professional level. And you know, in one vein, I'll talk about the latest Captain America movie, and then in another vein, I will talk about, you know, the presidential election. And that's just me. I think a lot of it, you know, especially with what you see out of the Twitter account, I'm the only one out there. I'm the only one that's exclusively tweeting from at Black Girl Nerds. That's shaming. That's just me just talking about things that I'm interested in. And I know that I've probably broken several brand building rules from tweeting from that account, being very subjective in my opinions. But, you know, I just, that's just the way I've handled this framework for the last 4 years. And it's, you know, surprisingly have worked in my favor. and, you know, having people like Shonda Rhimes saying that, you know, you're one of my favorite people to follow on Twitter, that I never expected those kinds of responses, because I really don't think I have much of a filter on Twitter. So I say that all to say that I leave it up to the actual person that's the creator to decide whether or not they want to go the social justice work path with, you know, creating nerd and geek content, or any kind of content for that matter, or if they want to do both. I just personally would like to do both.
Okay, that's great. Thank you very much. That is Jamie Broadnax, and I am Poe Johnson, signing off for Narratives in Dark Culture. Have a great day. Dark Culture.